from KDNK Community Access Radio in Carbondale, Colorado, in the United States. This is program number 70 of the Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. When blind people go places, we don't experience them like our sighted friends. We don't see beautiful mountains or romantic sunsets. The goal of this program is to identify and even create experiences that are more meaningful or just more fun for us and for our sighted traveling companions. Frequently, as people lose their eyesight, they become more and more isolated. The Tactile Traveler hopes to empower people not only to go literally around the world, but around the block, to new adventures in their lives. Blind ranges from people who are visually impaired, and glasses and contact lenses no longer allow them to lead a normal life, to people like me who are totally blind, to sighted parents who have a blind child, blind parents who have sighted children, blind parents with blind children, and people of all ages, interests, and physical abilities. On today's program, your last trip, options available to you after you die, and how people who are blind in one eye can experience seeing in three dimensions. Sooner or later, I hope way later for our listeners, everyone takes their final trip after we pass away. There are a number of interesting options for our final destinations, besides being buried in the ground or above ground tombs or mausoleums, and being cremated. You can donate organs which live on, or you can donate your entire body to science. You can be buried at sea, or even have your cremains shot into space. Many of the listeners to this program have had, or will have, one or both eyes removed, or have been recipients of corneas or sclera transplants from other people after they have died. Corneas are the clear lens on the front of your eye, and sclera is the white part that makes up most of the outside of your eye. John Lohmeyer is executive director of the Rocky Mountain Lions Eye Band in Aurora, Colorado, one of the agencies that facilitates cornea transplants. John says, even though we may be blind or visually impaired, our eyes may still help other people see after we pass away.
Absolutely. Most eye conditions that result in low vision or blindness don't affect the cornea. Even if someone has corneal blindness, sometimes they wanted to be a donor, they could. The utility or the use of the donated tissue. For example, there are some research-related needs for corneal tissue, even from folks who've suffered corneal blindness.
A history of cataract surgery usually doesn't decrease the value of eyes for donations.
If we live long enough, we'll all eventually end up with cataracts. And something like cataracts doesn't affect a cornea transplant or sclera use at all.
John says about 10% of the donations are the entire eye.
Oftentimes, the entire eye is recovered either because we need the sclera, you know, there's a need for sclera that we're trained to fulfill, or for research training purposes. Oftentimes, surgeons may, as they're learning to perform a lot of the other eye surgery, they often use a human eye for the last few practice rounds before they go to a patient, just to make sure that they have their techniques down. And then oftentimes, different parts of the eye may be needed for different research, for example, the retina or the lens.
People who are having an eye removed can also donate their enucleated eye. They're called living donors. John says even having a history of cancer usually won't rule out transplanting your cornea.
Most cancer is not a rule out for donation, but two cancer types that are, if they haven't been in remission for at least 5 years, is leukemia and lymphoma.
Your eye can still be used for research. If you'd like to donate your cornea, entire eye, or additional life-saving organs, check Donate Organs on the back of your driver's license or state ID. Also, be sure that your family is familiar with your wishes, because those donations need to be made very soon after your passing. If you'd like to donate your entire body to science, typically a medical school, you can sign up with that school in advance. Then they'll send you a donor card to carry in your wallet. Surprisingly, there may be a cost to your family. For example, I'm donating my body to the University of Colorado Medical School. They only pick up donated bodies free if they're within about 35 miles from their campus. I live 175 miles from the medical school. When I signed up to donate my body many years ago, they were charging $1.35 per mile for the additional 145 miles to my home in Glenwood Springs, where I'm most likely to pass away. I'm donating my body to science because researchers and medical students can only learn the important things they need to know to perform their jobs from human bodies. In addition to donating your body to a medical school, there's another way to donate your body to science. You can donate your body to a body farm. A body farm is a research facility where human remains are placed outside in a secure environment to study how bodies decompose and how long it takes them to decompose under different circumstances. Their research helps police and coroners determine how long someone's been dead when their bodies are found outside. Christine Bajan, PhD, assistant professor of anthropology, Colorado Mesa University, Grand Junction, Colorado, is the director of the university's Forensic Investigation Research Stations, which has two body farms, which she refers to as FIRS.
FIRS is actually composed of two facilities. We have one in the Rocky Mountain region at just under 10,000 feet above mean sea level. And then we have our primary lab in Grand Junction, Colorado, that's at just under 5,000 feet above mean sea level. An autopsy suite where we remove remaining soft tissue from skeletons that we bring in from the outdoor facility. They then matriculate into our curated osteology collection. So in our indoor lab, we use that for teaching students human osteology. Everything goes along with forensic anthropology methods. And we also use those skeletons for research.
Dr. Bajan says the first thing students do when they receive a new donor is a baseline study of that donor.
Everything begins in the indoor facility. We document just about everything we can about them. So we look at their teeth, we view the whole body, I guess you could say, and we document things like scars, tattoos, any medical intervention, things like piercing. We take pictures of sort of every aspect of the body, and then they move into our outdoor facility. What that means is we are studying sort of the rate and pattern of human decomposition in two of Colorado's really distinct environments. Right now, we have several different studies going on. We have actually a student-led project where she is looking at, she's using donors sitting in camp chairs, and she is looking at how that impacts how quickly someone decomposes, but beyond that, sort of the distinct pattern that that creates in how they decompose. There's a lot of recreation in Colorado. That is a scenario we see in forensic contact. People go into backcountry, and especially at high altitude, because it's so physiologically demanding, it becomes very demanding for the body to try to acclimatize and to acclimate to that environment, sort of sends physiological systems into overdrive. So we see not only forensically relevant deaths, but also just natural death. And because they'll tend to go sort of far out into the backcountry, and we see this in both environments, they're just not found for a long time. So understanding what sort of that trajectory of decomposition looks like in a controlled environment, and then use that information in case context to say, well, we know it takes X number of days to get to this point in decomposition, so we can give you a time since death estimate.
Dr. Bajan says cremains are also valuable to them, but they need them before the remaining bone fragments are pulverized, which is a normal part of the cremation process.
So again, in studies like this, our donors opt into them. So they make the decision in their paperwork either that we can use their body for any type of study. We also have a section where they can specifically opt out of study. So we have a lot of donors that say, yes, put me in a burnt remains study because it's just like being cremated. We are also doing a series of burial studies. That is a forensic scenario we see a lot. But we absolutely have donors, and I'm with them, who are like, do not bury me. I do not want to be buried. So we let them make those stipulations in their paperwork.
If you'd like to donate your body, you can do it online.
The easiest way is we have a website that is easily findable. If you just Google the Forensic Investigation Research Station, if you tack Colorado Mesa University on there, it should be the first thing that pops up in either respect. But we have a tab on there about body donorship, so that will walk people through what guidelines are for body donation. So there are some medical parameters that we apply. We don't accept individuals with diseases like HIV, hepatitis C, MRSA, and that is because we work with undergraduate students, so we have to remain cognizant kind of their safety. We do not accept embalmed body, but that is largely the only limitation we have. We'll accept donors who, for example, have donated organs or tissue. We actually are incredibly supportive of that. We will accept autopsy donors.
Dr. Bajan says more than 500 people have signed up to donate their bodies to the research program.
Let me start with the structure of our donor pool. We study human donors, so there is a common misconception that the donors that come to our program are part of sort of a larger pool of people that have donated themselves to science. Especially online, I hear like, ooh, imagine if you donated yourself to science and that's where you ended up. That's not how our program is structured. We have over 500 living donors who have filled out paperwork. They carry around a donor card and we are their end of life plan. So they know exactly where they're going vis-a-vis to our facility. They know what type of research their body will be used for. And they also understand that we then retain the skeletons in you, that sort of line of teaching and research. So they have filled out paperwork to come to us. They know exactly what type of research they will be used for. We do also have a second set of donors where next of kin has made the final disposition decision for them. Basically, they didn't have any life plan and was aware that they were very in the forensic sciences or very interested in certain lines of research. So they hold the legal capacity to make decisions about final disposition. So we also have a suite of donors that come to us along that line.
Colorado Mesa University will only pick up a donated body within 75 miles from Grand Junction, Colorado. The family donating the body is responsible for any cost of transportation over 75 miles. If you'd like to donate your body to a body farm and don't live near Colorado, search the web for a body farm closer to you. But they might not be much closer because there are fewer than a dozen body farms in the entire world, and most of them are in the United States.
You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low-vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg.
Burial at sea is another option. Captain Tony Miller is owner of Burial at Sea Memorial Services in Long Beach, California, one of several companies offering burial at sea services. He says,
the send-off is a really beautiful thing, too. We do it with rose petals. Once the remains hit the water, it creates this really pretty cloud. And just depending on the lighting, the watercolor, everyone's different. It is very beautiful and dignified way to send a loved one and provide closure to the family.
Captain Tony says there are several options for the ceremony.
We do it a couple different ways. One way is an attended memorial service. We can take up to 100 passengers out to sea. There are boats that do a higher capacity. And we scatter the remains at sea. And after that, we will make a circle around the remains and kind of rewind the clock for the family and give them the opportunity prior to that for any last words or bid farewell for anything they'd like to say. And then we also do what they call the unattended option, which is no family present. A lot of times people from out of state or no next of kin will get the remains to us and we'll take them out, scatter them, and we'll go ahead and send the family and the coordinate of exactly where the remains were scattered. Our trips are 1 hour long from when we leave the dock. It takes 20 minutes to get to our location, 20 minutes to do the scattering and final goodbyes and final words the family may want to say, and then 20 minutes to return to dock.
So far, we've discussed scattering your remains at sea. Captain Tony says they can also bury bodies at sea that have not been cremated.
That is not as common, and it is a little bit trickier. Different guidelines. That has to be in a certain amount of feet of water. Casket has to be prepared a certain way, which is all set forth by the Cremations Disposal California Funeral Bureau, where we maintain my license through. They're like 6-inch holes. They have to be placed, you know, so far apart in so many different locations. They can do it in a casket or in like a shroud. It has to be weighted down to alleviate the buoyancy of the casket so it does allow it to sink.
Captain Tony says costs start as low as $200.
The unattended memorial ranges anywhere from $200 to $500, just depending on the location. You're going with passenger count, and it can be anywhere from $700-$800 to a couple thousand, just depending on the passenger count. If you have 150 people and two different boats going out, we like to cater it to families' needs because you only get one opportunity to do it right, and we want to make sure that we do it right.
Captain Tony says burial at sea is a very popular option. I spoke to him in early September. If you don't want your body or remains buried at sea, you can be blasted into space, at least a small part of you. Charlie Schaefer is CEO and co-founder of Celestis, Inc.
We're a company that provides memorial spaceflight services. We want DNA samples and cremated remains into space, into Earth orbit, to the moon, and deep space.
They don't fly your entire body into space. Just enough of your cremains to fill a space capsule about the size of a wide watch battery. But you don't have to wait until you die. They'll send the same amount of your DNA while you're still around to watch.
DNA, it's 100% of the genome. For cremated, we fly what we call a symbolic portion, which is anywhere from 1 to 7 grams per person.
Charlie says they don't own any rockets themselves.
We buy from commercial launch services providers. We've flown Northrop Grumman, Pegasus, and Taurus, Lockheed launch vehicle, SpaceX Falcon 1, Falcon 9, and Falcon Heavy, ULA Vulcan, the missions that we've done. NASA does provide commercial launch services. They got out of that were a long time ago, is why we now have a very healthy commercial launch services industry.
Charlie says they'll even fly you to the moon. Since rockets don't always fly as intended, Charlie says you'll know where at least part of you will go after you die.
We had a mission that tried to do that about 2 years ago. We had about, I guess, 140 folks on it. And while we achieved the translunar insertions, we sent the spacecraft out of Earth orbit into the moon. Spacecraft had an anomaly and basically did a once around the moon and came back and burned up. Earth's atmosphere. So we'll be reflying those folks. We have a reflight guarantee together with additional folks. I think that's scheduled right now for early next year. It'll probably be closer to late next year when we do that mission. We always require that people send us for the very reason that occasionally there are failures. We've had, I think, three over 34 years. And in that event, we have a sufficient amount to refly them out of the cremated remains that were sent to us.
As you can guess, lots of Charlie's clients are Star Trek fans. He guesses at least 25%. He even says that part of the show's original cast are really going where no man has gone before.
Our Voyager service to deep space, it's right now about a year and a half into a 2.5-year journey from Earth to about 300 million kilometers. We'll orbit the sun as long as the sun's there, eventually as the sun expands, but it's in a deep space. It's in an orbit, takes it past Mars, so it's in a very deep space, heliocentric orbit, so the sun will have to eat a couple of planets before it gets to. We're not only a destination, but we're also an experience. People celebrate their loved ones on board by coming to 3-day launch experiences that we host. And it's just amazing to see your loved one lift off on a giant rocket and fill that loved one's dreams. We host families at the launch site when the launch is occurring, provide them with a tour, astronaut speakers, receptions, and then a private area at the launch.
You can check the cost on their webpage, celestris.com. That's CELESTIS.com. Once again, that's CELESTIS.com.
They said billion-year trajectory. That's $13,000. Just as a marker point, the average funeral cost in the U.S. these days is right at around close to $10,000.
Charlie says they're becoming more and more popular, and their number of clients just keeps going up.
We've been growing about 45% per year. Year over year for the last 5 years, coming up to around 3,500 once we complete a mission that's scheduled for early next year.
Brianna Sinclair helped with this story. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg.
The following story first aired on program number 9.
There's a way for people who are blind in one eye to expand what they can see. If you're blind in one eye, Lydia Eckert has a tip you might find useful.
When you look at something with two eyes, each eye is seeing it in two dimensions from slightly different angle. Your brain mixes the two pictures together, and you experience this in three dimensions. If you only see things with one eye, you only see in two dimensions, which looks flat like in a photograph, to people who see with both eyes. But there's a way for people like me, who are totally blind in one eye, who experience 3D, like the space between the tip of a person's nose and their face. Holograms are optical illusions. And they're a three-dimensional illusion. Some of the places you could see holograms are the Illinois Holocaust Museum in Skokie, Illinois, Oscar's Candle Holocaust Museum and Education Center in Terre Haute, Indiana, Dallas Holocaust and Human Rights Museum, Houston Holocaust Museum, Los Angeles Museum of the Holocaust, Swedish History Museum, Stockholm, Sweden, Malt Museum of Jewish Heritage, Beechwood, Ohio, and the Rise of the Resistance attraction in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, at Disneyland Anaheim, California, and at Disney's Hollywood Studios, Disney World, Orlando, Florida.
Thank you, Lydia.
Check in advance to make sure the museum you'd like to visit still has a hologram exhibit. You're listening to The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. I'm Nick Eisenberg. Why, it's my talking scale, reminding us that we'd like you to weigh in on how we're doing. Please let us know by sending an email to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. We spell traveler the American way, with one L. We'd also like to hear your story ideas from all over the world. Please send us an email with story ideas in the subject line to thetactiletraveler@gmail.com. Transcripts of this program are available for our deaf listeners by searching The Tactile Traveler in any search engine. This program is also being broadcast on AfterSight, formerly the Audio Information Network of Colorado, and audio information networks in additional states. It's also available by typing The Tactile Traveler into any search engine. And it's available wherever you get podcasts, and by asking your smart speaker to play the podcast, The Tactile Traveler. We'd like to thank the following people and organizations that help make today's program possible. Be My Eyes Microsoft Accessibility Tech Support, Apple Accessibility Tech Support, Pat Conroe, Lorraine Hutchinson, Debbie O'Leary, Sarah Williams, Sophia Williams, Megan Passmore, Kaylee Romero, Evan Starrs, and Raleigh Burley. This has been The Tactile Traveler, empowering blind and low vision people to explore the world and helping our sighted friends see the world in a new way. This is a production of KDNK Community Access Radio, Carbondale, Colorado.